How do we work with the shame when it's attached to a traumatic experience? Trauma-based shame can be very difficult to approach, especially if it's trauma from childhood. But Dr. Bessel van der Kolk has discovered one method that can help clients deal with their pain by making it more interactive. Here's Bessel.
I'm a trauma expert, so I see traumatized people, so that I have a particular angle on things. I'm also largely not a traditional psychotherapist. So I'm going to talk about some things that most people don't do. But the issue of shame is central to chronic trauma, not so much acute trauma, because what we're increasingly understanding is that if something bad happens to you and your caregivers pick you up and say, oh, I'm so sorry this happened to you, you can feel safe and you don't blame anybody. But if the caregivers are the source of the pain and blame you for what's going on, you blame yourself. And so the issue of self-blame is almost universal in chronic trauma and is pervasive in throughout psychiatric practice, because so many people are traumatized and have had childhood trauma experiences. And it's always about blaming yourself for what you did or did not do during the time. And so I should have been stronger. I should have not loved him so much. I should have resisted more. I should have done something. And so, and the shame about, the shame becomes a meaning-making system. Like, this happened to me because there was something wrong with me. And if in the future I don't do that, I'll be okay. So in some ways, shame becomes an important defense that makes you help, like, in the future, things can do better if I hide that part of myself. But then shame becomes an organizing issue to encapsulate the trauma. And when, you know, we do this very commonly, I did it today again in some work I did, is you ask people, so how do you feel about that three-year-old who was molested or was abused? And people will say, I hate that kid. I can't stand that kid. She was weak. She loved that guy and she should have resisted him. And she's disgusting. And he was weak and he was dependent. And he didn't rise up against his dad and didn't put up resistance. And so it's the self-loathing and the shame becomes maybe sort of the central issue in chronic trauma, not the event, but the relationship that people have to themselves. Okay. So if you have relatively simple trauma, people start feeling shame, and you do EMDR. Very simple. People say, I feel ashamed. What do you see? I see myself. They start doing EMDR, and the shame sort of goes away as the memories get integrated. So you can bypass this whole issue of the self-loathing and the shame. If it is not about specific traumatic events, but sort of a global feeling about who you are, then to my mind, IFS is clearly one of the best ways to go and to really help people to differentiate, always very important, to say that you are not this kid who was being molested. There was a four-year-old, an eight-year-old, a 12-year-old, and to start making a very clear differentiation about you right now and that kid back then. And most people blend themselves with that abused kid and say, I'm that abused kid. But they're not an abused kid. Right now, they're 100 pounds heavier, and they're much clumsier, and they drive a car, and they have a house, and they're almost nothing about that kid back then is recognizable in them. But they find themselves as, I'm that abused kid. And so it's very important at this point to really image that kid back then. How old were you? Talk about the circumstances. What happened to the kid? What is it like for that kid? How tall was that kid? Do you remember the rooms they lived in and what people looked like? And really get that perspective of that person back then. And to see that you really are a very different person than that kid was back then. And certainly, and that all these defenses that you build up are defenses to protect the core of yourself. And then by differentiating what the kid went through and what you're going through right now, you try to vividly evoke the scenes of back then and say, now, if you came across that scene right now, if you're 50 years old, you're a bulky person, if you saw that scene right now, what would you do? Would you beat that kid up? Or would you molest that kid yourself? And people said, I would grab that kid and run out with him. Or I would punch that guy who's doing it. So that internal differentiation is terribly important. I think that IFS is quite helpful for that. I think this is just totally the way to go for people who are basically traditional psychotherapists. That's the model that I'm happiest with. But what I like to do, I've been into theater a long time. And I also studied El Paso, and I do psychomotor structures with people. And that's a whole different kettle of fish. And it's actually one of my favorite things because I always see these dramatic transformations. And that is, I set it up in three-dimensional space, and I bring the various people into the room. And I say, so bring your dad into the room and where you want him. And choose somebody to be their dad who molested them, and they are filled with feelings. And so I say, we can like choose somebody to play the role, and that person stands here. And once you introduce a three-dimensional scene, something happens to your perceptions. My hunches, although we have not had a chance to research this, is that when you put things in three-dimensional space, you get out of this linear left brain thinking, and you get into more spatial and temporal right brain thinking. And when we put these characters out in space, then suddenly you become the three-year-old together, part of you becomes the three-year-old, and you say, so what's it like to have your dad in the room right now? And people will say, you asshole, look what you did to me. How you let me down. I was ashamed of you. I tried to take care of you. And people suddenly are able to replay the scenes back then from how they are right now. I find this three-dimensional work astoundingly effective to bring in the dimension that I've never been able to get into people, as long as you stay in the talking, sitting on your butt, you talk to me about people who aren't here. But then there's people actually come into the room, the whole ballpark changes, and the shame disappears. And somehow people see, you were gigantic, and I was this little kid. And you know, and suddenly they get in touch with what they did to survive, to deal with things, and then they say, and my mom just stood by and didn't do anything, and you say to call your mom into the room and have somebody play your mom, and you say, and you have the mother standing there, and all kinds of very intense feelings start to come up, and you say, what's it like to have your mom here? And they start weeping and say, you were never there for me. I was all by myself. How could you do this to me? You always let me down. And what you then do is to bring in ideal parents. And so you choose somebody to be the father who you wish you had back then, and you choose somebody of the group that you're working in, and you place that person very carefully in space. The people are very good in knowing where it should go, and you have that person say to you, if I'd been your ideal dad back then, I would have protected you. I would have cherished you. And people burst out weeping and say, oh my God, if when I was 3 years old, I'd had a father who would have said to me, my whole life would have been different. And he starts setting up sort of circuits of new experiences. Oh, I wouldn't have been such an idiot in school. Oh, I would have been able to get along better with my roommates. Oh, I wouldn't have been so shy with girls. Oh, I would have been more gentle. And they see their lives sort of being re-scripted in some ways.
By breathing life into these painful memories, it allows clients to rewire their shame with corrective experiences. For a different take on this, here's Bill O'Hanlon.
One story I came across a while ago, I mentioned that I used to specialize in eating disorders, and that sort of morphed into treating sexual abuse survivors and trauma victims. And I came across a story by the former Miss America, Marilyn Vanderburgh, who was, you know, beautiful, successful, had made a lot of money in her life, married a very wealthy person. And she then at a certain point just fell apart because she remembered having been sexually abused by her stepfather when she was growing up. And just terribly abused by him, in many ways, and shamed. And so she started a new career going around talking to people about the dangers and the sequela, the after effects of child sexual abuse, and just educating people. This is more common than we think. And so one time she's on a plane, flying first class, and she's seated next to a businessman. And she's just, you know, a gorgeous, smart, you know, accomplished person. And of course, he wants to talk to her. And he tells her all about his life and his successes and everything. And finally, about three quarters of the way through the flight, he turns to her and says, "Oh, look at me. I've been talking all by myself. You know, what do you do?" And she said, "You don't really want to know what I do." he said, "No, no, I really do." And she goes, "I don't think so." And so he presses her and she said, "Well, I was, you know, a former Miss America, and now I travel around, and I was terribly sexually abused by my stepfather when I was growing up. And, you know, I split parts of myself. I developed almost like a multiple personality." And she's telling him all this stuff, and this businessman who's not used to these emotional topics, his eyes are getting wider, and he's looking more and more freaked out. And she can tell she's about to lose him. And she finishes the story, and then she turns to him and says, "And now I'll tell you what you should say to me in response to that." He said, he just nodded his head, and she said, "I want you to turn to me, look me in the eyes, and say, 'I'm terribly sorry that happened to you.'" And he turned to her and he looked her in the eyes and said, "I'm terribly sorry that happened to you." He had no idea what to say. He was speechless. And I love that story because, number one, she knew what triggered her. If she told him this and he reacted badly, back into the shame she would go. She knew what triggered her, and she had even figured out how she could coach other people to respond to her, to de-shame her and not trigger the shame. And I thought, so I tell that story to my clients, and I say, that's one of the things we're going to work on. Maybe you'll never get rid of the shame. And there are some situations that are going to trigger you. You got to figure out what those are and either avoid those. If you can't avoid them, you need to figure out how you can respond and coach other people, especially people in your intimate relationship, but even strangers like Marilyn Vanderburgh. And I've had clients come back and say, "I have thought so much about exactly what I'd like to hear from someone if I tell them this thing or if I go into shame, that would undo the shame." And I think that's a really important thing to get clear on when you're clear that shame is one of your major issues.
By creating a kind of structure for how they deal with their shame, clients can retain more control over its power. In the next video, we'll look at different ways shame can be linked to implicit trauma. I'll see you there.